Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments for the NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, fights, and NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs. That includes live betting and fan favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's really easy to get started. Just head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up and use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, it's where the game starts.
Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin.
Oh, baby! Woo! KD!
You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Catastrophic.
Hello and welcome back to the Believe in Timberwolves podcast, part of the Believe Network. I'm your host, Brendan Hedke, and I'm sitting with Doug West. We're here to talk NBA playoffs. Not a lot of Timberwolves news, Doug, but there is the news that they're going after Tim Connelly, who's the Denver Nuggets president right now. And from my understanding, the only reason Tim Connelly's thinking of coming to Minnesota is because the offer is astronomically high. The money's really high. Do you have any thoughts on that side of it? I don't know how much I want to go into it until it's a done deal, if it does become a done deal, but do you have any quick thoughts about replacing Sachin Gupta, who is the technically the vice president of basketball operations, but he's been the lead executive this season after Rosas left? What are your thoughts on that news breaking the other day?
Yeah, actually, that's the first I've heard of it when you just brought it up there. And Sasha has done such a great job in taking over the reins and running the team throughout this season. But, you know, Tim Connelly's also done a great job out in Denver. It's an unfortunate situation. We'll see how it plays out, but hopefully, Sasha can keep his spot.
Yeah, I'm just interested to see what happens. It sounds like even if Connelly got brought in, Gupta isn't necessarily gone. Connelly's been a good GM for Denver, and he's done some good things. Like, he drafted Jokic, he drafted Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., and also just like lower tier. Like, he drafted Malik Beasley, he drafted Jared Vanderbilt, who have turned out to be solid players. And he got them in like value picks, but at the same time, it's a weird situation where Gupta's in. Basically, it's like, sounds like, oh, we'll keep Gupta as number one unless we can get someone better than him. But if we can't, then we'll just keep him. And it seems very in the open about that, which is just weird. I feel like it's a weird spot for him to be in. But again, the initial report broke, but nothing really has come out since then. So we'll see if it happens. But my understanding, there's like ownership stake involved. Like, they're offering him a percentage of the ownership if he takes the job, which I think maybe Masai Ujiri in Toronto has some ownership stake, but it's not a very common thing. But obviously, that could make someone really, really rich, and that's a way for them to try to entice him to come over. But we'll see what happens over the next, I'm sure within the next week, we'll see if that happens or if it ends up that he turns it down. But that was just one point about the Timberwolves, and that's pretty much the only Timberwolves news we have. I guess we can talk about Patrick Beverley getting nine.
Patrick Beverley.
Yeah. We haven't talked since he went on TV.
Oh, Patrick Beverley.
I forgot about that. And we'll kind of tie that into something. But I was going to say Patrick Beverley, he received one first team all-defensive vote and seven second team. So he was really far from making anything. He was the only Timberwolf to receive any all-defense votes. We're still waiting on the all-NBA teams to be announced, and then Doug and I will kind of go back and look at what ours looked like from the previous one. But let's talk about the end of the first round. I've been sick, so it's been, I don't know, what has it been? A week? 2 weeks? Whatever. Yeah, since we talked last. And we last time talked about, you know, what we thought was going to happen in the first round, and
you were wrong.
Yeah.
No, we were wrong.
We thought Phoenix was going to, you know, just take care of Dallas because we thought they were just the best team in basketball. And they ended up going to a game seven. And this is where Patrick Beverley gets tied in. They played really bad in the game seven. Like, they just kind of gave up, like, really early on in the game. And then Patrick Beverley went on TV and talked a lot of smack about it. Can you say you've ever seen that type of effort in a game seven from a number one seed in any of your recollection of the NBA? Like, I can't remember a time, not even from an eight seed, or like that was the biggest disappointment I think I've ever seen in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was totally shocked at that performance by the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, we're shocked by the performance of the Suns, you know, especially going home, getting beat down like that on your home court when you were in a series where each team was winning at home. You know, Dallas had won those three games at home. Phoenix had won their games, you know, and it's really funny that, you know, Phoenix can go from beating Dallas by 30, you know, one night, to losing to them 2 days later, to losing to them again. Yeah, by 30 again, which was very, very interesting. You know, and Dallas just did a great job of you know, playing with house money, really. You're going into game seven, you have nothing to lose, you're comfortable. My thought looking at that game seven was, do you really want to have Luka in a game seven? Just watching the things that he's done internationally, you know, in the Olympics, you know, he is a big time player, and big time moments he loves. And then you look and you think about his whole career, he's played in these types of championships, you know. So when he was younger,
since he's like 13,
since 13. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's played at this level
for 10 years.
You know, he was just chomping at the bit, enjoying every moment of it. And his supporting cast stepped up big time. I mean, Dinwiddie, I think he had 30 points that game, or 20 something points that game. It was, you know, him, Brunson, you know, Luka, they just did an outstanding job. And defensively, you know, they just made it tough on Phoenix, got physical. Really physical with Chris Paul. You know, I think they really shocked Dallas with those traps. I mean, shocked Phoenix with those traps on Booker. And it was just a great game plan by Jason Kidd.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, Dinwiddie did score 30 in that game, but the Suns scored 27 points in the first half, 10 points total in the second quarter. And at that time, they just stopped. They did not try to keep playing, and Monty Williams did something by benching DeAndre Ayton for I don't think he stepped on the second half. I don't think he was on the court at all, or maybe just to start, but he barely played. And then he made a comment after the game that it's internal. So I wonder if it was just like that was just something he said, or if really something's been going on with him, or what that looks like. But DeAndre Ayton is in a contract year. He's a restricted free agent this summer. Phoenix could end up, I mean, DeAndre Ayton's going to get offered the max from someone.
Right.
And if Phoenix didn't feel comfortable playing him in that game, or if there's something going on, they're not probably going to match that offer. Maybe they try and do some sort of sign and trade, but you're not going to get as big a piece. This seems like a big shifting point for the Suns. Like, this could have been, if something goes the wrong way, that could have been the end of their hopes. And that's just been 2 years of them together. So it was just a disappointing performance all around from everyone in that game. Nobody really played good. I think the leading scorer was Cameron Johnson. He had 12 points.
Right.
That's
interesting about the Ayton thing. And then the way they played in the second half as well. So you know, sometimes you start to wonder if something went on, you know, as they said, internally behind the scenes in the locker room. Right. And it trickled out to the court for the second half. But, you know, they're professionals, guys, professionals. A lot of things happen in the NBA. You got to learn how to just push things aside and still go out there and compete to your best of your ability. And, you know, hopefully not lay an egg like that at home.
Yeah, for sure. But I just can't get over how bad it was, but the Dallas Mavericks did win. They moved on to the second round. The other rounds that we or the other matchups in the second round that we talked about were Boston and Milwaukee. And we, I think we both picked Milwaukee to win that one. I don't remember for sure, but no, we talked about that being the coin flip one.
I think what happened was I picked Phoenix and Milwaukee to go to the championship. So we know that's not happening. But I think when we said about that game seven, I know as I started watching Boston play, I just became so in tune with them and how they played defensively. And I think that, you know, we talked about that seventh game, but I think I finally went with Boston as my selection. But again, another great series. I mean,
that's the one we said was like the
coin flip.
And it turned out to be that way. They went to seven. I think it became clear that Milwaukee, outside of Chris Middleton, really has no wings that are like good enough for these moments. Mm-hmm. And it puts a lot on Drew Holiday and Giannis, mm-hmm. and your Grayson Allens and those guys just aren't enough on the wing there. So they really miss Chris Middleton in that series, but I still don't know if they would have won the series if Middleton was there. Obviously it gives them a better chance, but yeah, Boston just played fantastic basketball in that game 7-2, which was, cool to see because yeah, of course, you know, Milwaukee has been really dominant. It's awesome if they would have tried to go back to back, but it's also cool to see Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, after the tough start they had to this mm-hmm. season, everybody questioning if they can work together, if you need to trade them. They turned it around midseason, had the best defense for the rest of the year. And now they're, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals and playing good basketball. So I think that part has been nice to see. They kind of like put it to Milwaukee in game 7-2. They won by almost 30, which is, well, it's crazy that both our game sevens were not close. They weren't close at all.
Not close. And, you know, Boston did it on their home court. They went there and they held home court. But if I'm not mistaken, they went to Milwaukee and won game six as well. I think they had to go back to back after losing game five at home. Yeah. And, you know, stepping up, you know, Tatum stepped up, I think was 46 in game five at Milwaukee. And then, you know, he comes back in game seven and they just have a lights out performance by the whole team. And Boston is just they're playing some really, really good basketball right now.
Yeah, and that even shows going into the second round. The other two matchups we can talk about was Golden State and Memphis. I think it was pretty clear that Golden State was just the better team. They ended up closing it out in six games there. Do you have any thoughts on that series? I mean, Memphis, obviously, without Ja Morant, it's a, you know, you're missing your best player, but at the same time, they have played really good without him.
Right.
I think it would have been crazy if they would have won the series without Ja Morant. Then I think there would have been some questions to be asked. I don't know if they would be legitimate questions to be asked, but Ja wasn't there. So then I think Golden State just totally overmatched for Memphis there and just way overpowered. They won it in six. Any thoughts on that series?
Yeah, it was another one of those series where, you know, I thought Golden State had to close that game out in game six because they had just got blown off the court in game five, you know, in Memphis. And they played an outstanding game. And, you know, you have to give Golden State credit because they went and they adjusted their lineup. They threw Looney in there for game six. I think he went for a 20-20 game that game and just, you know, helped them close out that series in six, because going back to Memphis for a game seven, I think would have been a difficult situation for Golden State.
Yeah, I definitely think that they didn't want to do that regardless of if Ja was there. I think that you're back at home. You have all that momentum of we don't have our best player, but we're still here in game seven. So I think it was a good adjustment for Steve Kerr to play Kevon Looney during that game because he did. I mean, I think you're right. I think he did have 20 something points and 20.
Maybe it was this. No, it was 22 rebounds.
It was 4 points, but it was 22 rebounds.
22 rebounds, yeah.
Which is, it's crazy that he got 11 offensive rebounds and scored 4 points.
Right.
No, like, no putbacks.
Kick it back out, man. Kick it out for threes.
But that was a dominant performance on the glass there from him. And then the last series we haven't talked about yet was Miami versus
Philadelphia.
And that was tough. Joel Embiid obviously missed the beginning of that series with his facial fracture. He was also dealing with a hand injury. You made it to one of those games, right? Or two of those games?
Yep. One. Went to one a game.
Which game was that again?
I think it was game three. Game three. Because it was the return of the mask.
Oh, yeah. So you saw his first game back.
Return of the mask, yes.
So Miami ended up winning that series 4-2. And we thought that would be tough if Joel Embiid wasn't playing. Because Miami went out and won the first two games. Embiid came back for game three. And they won game three and game four, tied it back up. And then Miami went and won games five and six. I need to ask you, how are you feeling about James Harden in Philadelphia right now? Because he clearly isn't the same player that he was in Houston during his heyday, winning the MVP and all that. It seems like he's a different type of player, a lot more of a facilitator, less of a scoring guard. Still obviously scores, but he's not scoring 30-something points a game like he did in Houston. What's the overall, because you live in Philadelphia, what's the overall thoughts of James Harden after seeing him for, you know, half this season into the playoffs? How are fans feeling about him there?
I think the fans, they like the James Harden, the Harden trade. They like what James brings to the team. I think a lot of people were thinking that he was going to come in and be the Houston James Harden.
Right.
You know, when they first got him, this guy's going to come in, we're going to run pick and roll, and James is going to score at will and get to the foul line, and Joe's going to be able to do his things. And it started out that way. But as the season progressed and it went along, I think you realize the Sixers needed a few more pieces. You know, James couldn't break people down one-on-one and get by them. Teams started just building those walls and loading to him and making him pass the ball to guys who just weren't making shots. So, you know, game three, guys made shots. I think Danny Green, you know, went crazy and made shots that game. Game four, some guys, you know, made shots. But five and six, they were just two very bad games. You know, five in Miami, they got beat pretty good. And then coming back in game six and laying an egg at home. So, you know, the biggest concern I think people have with the James Harden thing right now is they're still talking about giving him that supermax.
Right.
And people are saying making $60 million at 37 just doesn't sound right.
Right. And the thing about him, you know, not being able to maybe blow past his defender and things like that. I mean, he is 32 years old, you know. Some guys, when they have had that much usage in their career, like he's been a high volume player, you know, you just eventually your body does slow down a little bit and he doesn't have quite as much burst. Not that he was ever a super athletic bursty player, but he had enough finesse and enough skill to get by guys. And a little bit of that's going away, but I think he's still a very good player. He's one of the best at getting his teammates open, finding open shots for them. But yeah, the Supermax, I can almost see it now. He signs it, has two more solid years. Then he starts to go downhill and there's 3 years left in that contract. And it's going to be like the John Wall situation where it's, right. We got this guy for John Wall's is like 40 something million, I think. But yeah, that just seems like an astronomical amount of money to give someone that you're not sure he's not going to get better. I don't think, you know, like, I don't think he's going to, there's no way he returns to that form that you might've hoped he had. So that seems like a tough deal, but at the same time, you kind of got to pay him. Otherwise somebody else is probably going to pay him. So it's that tough situation, kind of like, I guess, kind of like the Ayton situation, but different in the fact that Ayton still is young and has room to grow. Harden is kind of on the other side of the line there. That's a tough one. I don't know if I was Philadelphia, what I would do. You can try to do some sort of sign and trade. When sign and trades happen, though, you don't, one, you have to like send out that amount of money.
Right.
So if James Harden's contract's 50 something million, you got to make up at least most of that money to be able to do that. And the second part is you don't get as much talent in return.
In return.
Yeah. I mean, like Golden State sign and trade with Brooklyn, Kevin Durant, they got D'Angelo Russell. We'll talk about talent gap there. Like, right. Yeah, you got a solid player, but you're not getting equal value right. at all. So I don't know what Philadelphia is going to do there, but it's a tough spot to be in because that is a huge, huge contract to give to someone that you're not sure how well he's going to perform. And he's going to be 37 by the end of it.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think, well, we know, or he would be crazy. I think he's going to, he has a player option at $47 million for next year. So I think he's, you know, he's going to take the player option and then we'll see what goes, what happens from there. You know, it's still an interesting situation there because like you said, I mean, I think he averaged 20, 22 and 10 assists and maybe 22, 10 and eight. I mean,
those are great numbers.
Those are great numbers, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's tough to say that. I mean, it's tough to complain about a guy putting up those stats. Like,
yes,
in retrospect, still a top 15 player in the league, but you just have to take into account all that when it goes in. I'm sure he will accept the player option. It'll be interesting to see if Philadelphia tries to move him on that. I don't think they're going to. I'm just more interested to see when the contract's up, what type of extension he does get and if he does get it in Philadelphia, because that's that's crazy. It's a crazy number to pay someone. So we covered all four series. Now we got two. Obviously, the conference finals are happening right now. Boston, Miami are tied up 1-1. In game one of that series, Jimmy Butler had a great game. And the Celtics played really well in the first half, and then it kind of went down, and then they came back a little bit at the end there. And then game two kind of flipped the script. Marcus Smart had a fantastic game. 24 points, I think 9 rebounds, 12 assists, or 12 assists, or 12 rebounds, 9 assists, one of the way, almost a triple-double. Right. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown showed up again, too. They showed up in game one, just didn't get the win. They showed up in game two. But Jimmy played really well in game two, but he got no help from any of his teammates because I think he had like 29, so he played fine. And then it was like Gabe Vincent and Victor Oladipo were next with 14. Tyler Hero only scored 11. Bam was like a non-factor on the offensive side. What's your overall thoughts on this series? Obviously, it's tied up. Miami does have home court advantage. Had home court advantage. Now Boston has kind of stolen home court advantage. How are you feeling about this series? Where do you think it'll, how long do you think it'll go? Who do you think might end up on top after it's all said and done?
Yeah, I thought that the biggest question going into game two was, you know, at the time was, is Smart going to be able to play? Because I didn't think, game one, both Smart and Al Horford were out. And then game two comes and Smart's back and Horford's back. So they had their lineup, they had their rotations in, put people back in their proper places. And they just came out and played the way that I expect the Boston Celtics to play, the way they've been playing. Marcus Smart setting the tone on the defensive end. These guys moving the ball, playing with toughness. Really, really helping each other, being a solid team. And they just made it hard, very hard on Miami. I think in two games, I think I saw today that Hero and Bam have combined for 45 points in the two games. And Butler has 70 points. Now, Kyle Lowry's out. You have some guys that have been down. So he really hasn't had that support. And what happened to Duncan Robinson? Is he just not allowed to play anymore or what? They just gave him a big contract last year.
I know that's guy goes, he's not playing at all. I don't know if it's like I don't know if it's like Max Strus is just
right
more effective on defense or something. I don't, I haven't really paid attention to that specific storyline, but that is something, because Duncan Robinson, not that he got a max, but he got, I think, like 18 million or 15. Million? Yeah.
I think it was 90 million over like 5 years. Yeah.
So that's like 18 a year. So that's a big, I mean, that's a big payday for somebody sitting on your bench. I mean, the Timberwolves have had it before too, where guys have been paid that much and not really useful, but not like out of the rotation.
I mean,
not useful.
He's not even there.
Which is, it is interesting. I wonder if we'll see him if they go down, you know, next game 2-1. If we see Coach Spoelstra, you know, break glass in case of emergency, throw him out there and hope he can knock down 8 threes. That's a steep fall off for someone right after they got paid, which is interesting that we saw that. So I'm interested to see if he does play at all in the series anymore, because I don't think he's gotten a minute. Maybe in game two after. Okay, he did play 14 minutes in game two, but I mean, they were down for most of that game too. They were probably trying to do, you know, something to get
searching for something.
So I'll be interested to see if game three he plays at all, if he's more in the rotation, and then moving on through the series. Let's look at the other side, the Western Conference Finals. We have Golden State and Dallas, who are, if you would ask me at the beginning of the year if those two teams would be in the conference finals, I probably would have said no. I wouldn't have maybe won. I could have seen Golden State possibly if everything fell right. And really, it hasn't necessarily fallen right. They've just played good basketball and been able to make it there. So that series is a 2-0 series. Golden State has, they took care of business yesterday to go up 2-0. And then they took care of business in game one. Also, both games haven't been necessarily close. Game two, they won by 9, but and they actually had to take that over in the fourth quarter, but it wasn't like a back and forth battle the whole time. They kind of took it over, and then it was a win from there on out. But Luka played really, really, I shouldn't say really bad. He didn't play great in game one. He was more limited, 27-4. Game two comes out, and it's crazy. They won the game that he didn't, or sorry, they lost the game by a lot that they didn't play well. They come back in game two. Luka plays really well. He scores 42 points, and Jalen Brunson plays well, but they still don't win. And that, I think, is the concerning part if you're a Mavs fan, is you got 42 points from Luka and 31 points from Brunson in game two, and you still weren't able to close out a game. I don't know how much, and I doubted Dallas in the last series. I don't want to doubt it too much.
I'm thinking the same thing.
I don't know what they can do to get enough. They didn't get much from Spencer Dinwiddie in game two. He only scored 4 points. They didn't get a lot from either of their bigs in Kleber or Powell. But Reggie Bullock still gave them 21 points. And like I said, Luka and Jalen Brunson played really well. What do they need to beat this Golden State team, or are they just not going to be able to beat this Golden State team?
Well, if we look back to the Phoenix series, it looks like all they need is some home cooking. I mean, you know, it seems like once these guys get back to Dallas, actually, that's where I am right now. Once they get back to Dallas, it seems like they just come out and they just play totally different team. I mean, last night they have a big lead. You know, again, NBA, you know, you look at big leads early, you always say, let's see where it is in the fourth quarter, you know, or let's see where it is at halftime. You know, at halftime it's 14 points.
14, yeah.
Yeah, halftime up 14 points, which is nothing in the league. You know, it's just, that's just, you know, in the grind of the game, you know, Jason Kidd, you know, I was listening to the news this morning. He's going off about their shot selection in the third quarter, where they were, I think it's 2-for-13 from three.
They really 13 points total in that.
They really lived on the 3-point shot, 21-for-45. And what's really interesting, and I saw this last night during the game, that Golden State scored 62 points in the paint. So 62.
And they're not points. A team that has a big dominant paint presence. You know, like their bigs are
right, exactly.
Looney, Draymond. So it's a lot of cutting, slashing,
cutting,
offensive rebounds, not
well,
a lot
Looney
of
did, Looney did get 20 last night. So he did. I think he had 20 last night, but
12 rebounds, 21 points.
This is just but that's not their game. Amazing game. Not their game at all, you know. And they basically they live by the two, and Dallas died by the three. You know, so I think Dallas is going to stay the same. They're still going to shoot their threes. And I think it just seems like defensively at home, they found something against Phoenix. And we'll see what happens in game three. But Golden State is a very veteran playoff team. I mean, they have guys who have been there. They've been in these, you know, you look all the way back to that game five in Memphis where they get blown out and they go home and win that game six. They've been in these situations before where they know how to close it out, and they have guys, you know, they're all back, them guys that have been there, and they're able to do so.
Yeah. And it's good. They got Otto Porter back. I think that he's been a big part of their recipe, I guess, for success in the playoffs. He's just another body they can put on Luka, who is a little bit stronger than Andrew Wiggins. Luka's not super quick. So Otto Porter's able to, I mean, he's a little bit older, not the same type of player he was a few years ago, but he's able to stay in front of Luka a little bit too. So I think that's been good that he's been able to come back. Wiggins has played solid defense at times. It's hard. I mean, you see the big scoring outbursts and you think, you know, Luka's still doing what he's doing, but at the same point, if they're winning games, it doesn't really matter if Luka scores 80 points or if he scores 12 points, the win is a win. So my question for you is, looking at this whole playoffs, a lot of times in the playoffs, it seems to come down to which teams have the best player. So I wonder, who do you think is the best player playing the best basketball right now that's left in these two conference finals? Who are the best players in each conference? Because you look over on in the Western Conference side, it looks to be Steph Curry and Luka. And where would you go between those two? Who's playing the best basketball right now in the Western Conference?
Well, I'll answer your question, but I look at it a little differently. I don't look at it as the best player in the playoffs. I go to which team is able to execute the best in a half court situation. Because again, when it gets down to this time of the year, everybody is seeing the other teams play. There's so much film. There's so much information. It really comes down to being able to execute your offense because you know where the ball's going most times. So you have to find a way to get those players open. So, you know, of the players in those games, you know, Luka and Steph, I mean,
it's no question.
I'd have to go with Steph right now.
And it's no question all time. Obviously, it's Steph. Like, Steph is, at this point in their career, Steph is, like, way ahead of Luka in accomplishments and player. And but I think it's an argument right now. Over in the Eastern Conference side, I guess I'll say I think Luka's probably playing better basketball, especially if you look at the body of work during the regular season. I think Steph didn't play. I mean, played really good basketball, but not, like, the level we've seen Steph Curry play basketball.
Okay, before. So hold on. We're going whole season now. You went back to the whole season.
Well,
I thought you were just saying in these games.
Okay,
we have going on right now.
If we're talking just the series, I would say
Steph.
Yes. If we're talking playoffs, I would say Luka.
Yes, I agree with you 100%.
Okay. Yeah, but this series specifically, Steph has been playing better than Luka.
Right.
Even though Luka did. I mean, he scored the most points out of anyone so far, but Steph has been the most consistent and he has played the best basketball, I think, in this series. But the whole playoffs, I would give it to Luka. Okay. Eastern Conference, if we go for just the series between Boston and Miami.
Gotcha.
Who are you? I mean, I think it's between Jason Tatum and Jimmy Butler. Who do you think that is going to, like, who would you say has been playing better between the two in this series?
I think it's Butler too, but it's really close.
But I think if you go all of the playoffs, both conferences, I think Jimmy Butler's been the best player in the entire playoffs. He has been playing really good basketball. He's been missing guys in his team. He's had guys in his team not showing up, and he's still in the Eastern Conference Finals. Their team is tied, and they still have a chance to go to the finals. I think Jimmy Butler's been playing the best basketball of anybody in the entire playoffs this year, which is, I mean, we've seen that before. When they were in the bubble, they went to the finals. We've seen Jimmy Butler do that. But it's been really impressive to see it. This specific series, I think it's been Butler, but not by a lot. I think Jason Tatum in this series has played really well. Even when they lost game one, I think he is he's done a really good job.
I have to, you know, now as we talk about the playoffs, you know, and I'm thinking here, you know, as you look at the whole playoffs, I mean, Jason Tatum, I mean, he's gone through, you know, Kevin Durant had to take them out in four, and he put up big numbers. You know, Giannis took them out in seven. He put up big numbers there as well. And then these two games. So, you know, that one right there is it's a really close race now that I really think about it. But I'm not, you know, disagreeing with you, because Butler has been outstanding. I mean, he had a great first round, you know, great second round, and now he's in the conference finals.
Yeah, and I don't think like there's a wrong answer between those two, but it's just interesting to think of like who excuse me, is playing the best basketball right now. I got another question for you, kind of a similar question. We know when series get close, a lot of what comes down to them is the ability to make adjustments as coaches. And we saw that last series with Golden State putting Kevon Looney and Steve Kerr doing that. Who do you think is the best coach remaining? I mean, I guess we could go each matchup, but also just overall best coach remaining in these playoffs. Because we got some great coaches. Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the league. Udoka in Boston has been doing a fantastic job this year. Steve Kerr is one of the most accomplished coaches in the league. And then Jason Kidd is not a new head coach, but in a new role, hasn't been a head coach for a couple of years. And he made some great adjustments in last series also. So who's been coaching the best basketball this playoffs out of those four remaining coaches? I think it's a tough question. I don't even know. I don't know if I have an answer, because I just thought of the question myself, but I think they've all been doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, that was a good one to throw on me since you just thought of it. But it was a great question. I'm going to say I've been impressed with all of them. And I agree with everything you said there about their level of coaching. Jason Kidd, we did not expect to be here. I did not expect Dallas to be here. He made some great adjustments to knock off. You know, everyone looked at Phoenix going into this, you know, number one seed, best record in the league, you know, Dallas, you know, they're going to go through Dallas. They go up 2-0 early. We write them off and they end up winning the series. Now they're in the conference finals. So I'm going to go with Jason Kidd.
Yeah, I think that's a great reasoning for that answer too. And I think what's interesting about Dallas is they made the Kristaps Porzingis trade earlier this year. And I mean, I didn't think that was a good trade for them. Davis Bertans has not been playing good basketball in Washington this year. Spencer Dinwiddie was hit or miss too. But it's worked out really good for them. Jason Kidd has found a way to make, lineups with Dinwiddie, Brunson, and Luka work, you know, three guard lineups. I mean, those guys aren't small guards, but they're still, I mean, Brunson is, but the other two aren't small guys. And he's done a fantastic job. And no, like you said, he went up, the odds were kind of stacked against them. Obviously, they were the 4 seed playing the 5 seed in the first round, but the 5 seed was Utah, who was a really solid team. Then they go out and they beat Phoenix. Obviously, they're down right now in the conference finals, but Jason Kidd has been doing a great job. I think Udoka has been doing a really fantastic job. Also, if you think back to round one against Brooklyn and the defense that he threw at Kevin Durant, just having his guys play physical with him, getting up in him, I think that was really, really impressive. And then coaching his guys to beat the reigning champs in the second round was also really good. But you can't discount Eric Spoelstra, who's had a lot of success. you can't discount Steve Kerr, who also has had a lot of success. So there's really good coaches left in the playoffs. And if I think about that from like a Timberwolves perspective, I think the Wolves have a good coach. I'm not saying he's on the level of Spoelstra and Kerr and those guys, but like, it's the first time since I've been old enough to even think about like the coaching aspect of the NBA where I feel confident in the Timberwolves coach to be able to scheme against someone. And we saw Finch make some good adjustments in the first round. But I guess it just gives me confidence that, you know, our guy's not that far behind these other coaches that are, you know, got their teams in the conference finals. So that part gives me a little bit of confidence, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, Finch did an outstanding job. And, you know, you hit it right on the head there. All four coaches have had outstanding series, have had outstanding seasons. I mean, you look back, you think about Udoka, they were trying to get Tatum and Brown, got to split them up at the beginning of the season because they weren't winning. And what he's done with that team throughout the year after January, and, you know, Spoelstra, great adjustments in his series. Yeah. And Steve Kerr, I mean, it's a great, actually, that when you think about it now, you have some really, really good coaches in this right now.
Yeah. You for sure do. Do you have any other thoughts? I guess we should talk about before we hop off how you think these series are going to go. I mean, like we said, Dallas is down 2-0 and then Miami and Boston are tied. Our prediction, the Phoenix prediction didn't work very good last time. Do we bet against Dallas again? Or I think I'm going, to be honest, I think I'm going Golden State in that one. But I'm not going to be as confident now and say it's going to end in 4 or 5. Like, Dallas might make some adjustments, win their 2 at home. It might go to 7, but I think Golden State is going to win that series. And if I had to go to the Miami-Boston one, I picked them at the beginning before the series started. Just in my mind, I picked Boston. So I think I'm going to stick with Boston in that one. But I think that one's probably, I mean, I think that's going 7. I really think kind of like that Milwaukee-Boston series. It's kind of a coin flip. So I think they're going to go 7 games there. But I think Boston does come out on top.
Yeah, I think the same way that you're thinking. I think Boston's going to come out on top. You know, I said that earlier that they're my pick right now to win it all. You know, and you know, you could have a Boston, and I think Golden State they just have too many pieces. Yeah. And you know, I keep saying, you know, Dallas, they're going to come home. They're going to play a game tomorrow night, and you know, we'll probably talk next week and it's 2-2 and it's like, oh, they're back in this again. And, but I really think Golden State just has too many pieces. And, I'm looking forward to a Boston Golden State final.
Yeah. I think that's what it's going to be. And if that is the case, or if that's not the case, we'll talk about why it went that way or why it didn't go that way. And then we'll break that down too. But I think that's all we got today, unless you have any other big topics.
Only big topic I just wanted to finish off is our boy Pat Beverly. Just, he came in this week and he turned, he had me sitting in front of Get Up and First Take for 4 hours.
Never watch. Yeah.
Which, you know, well, I actually watch them. I do. I am a watching of those shows. And it was just great to see TV, and so honest, so straightforward. And he's going to make a little career out for himself right there after he's done.
I bet ESPN's working on that contract.
Oh, I bet right you now, already.
It was entertaining. I mean, even if you don't agree with what he's doing, he's got the personality for it. Mm-hmm. He's got, he's not afraid to say what he thinks. And sometimes ESPN doesn't like to hire people who aren't afraid to say what they think, but he's been, yeah, it was a joy to watch. I didn't watch it live. I was at work, but I saw all the good clips, you know, on Twitter. And yeah, I mean, he said some things, but it was an interesting morning / afternoon of Patrick Beverly on ESPN. But yeah, like you said, he's honest, straightforward, and just really entertaining. So I could definitely see that panning out for him as a post NBA career, because I think him and JJ Redick did a good job too, and they're close. Yeah, they did. It's not like
they're good friends. They are, yes.
So they really I think they worked well together. So if we get a, we can get a show with those two, I think that would be, I think that'd be cool. Cause those guys definitely, I think they feed off each other well, which was really cool to watch too. And it's just cool to see Timberwolves on stuff like that. Like,
yes,
mm-hmm. You never had guys from the Timberwolves on ESPN, like doing things like that. I want to see Anthony Edwards on there and see what he would say. Cause he was on Instagram talking about Memphis and how they went down to Golden State, and he was, or not, sorry, not Memphis, Phoenix, and just clowning them too on online. So yeah, I definitely want to see more of Patrick Beverley on national TV like that.
Yeah. So, you know, it was great to see him. And, you know, lastly, let's, you know, make sure Cat gets better. So he went through some surgeries, you know, so yeah. He had a lot of stuff fixed up there. So
yeah, it sounds like just well. Like little minor stuff, but yeah,
getting his maintenance done.
Right. But yeah, I think everybody, they saw the pictures and they're like, oh, maybe he was going through a little bit of things. So, I mean, I guess you can't, I would never, Cat plays through a lot of, I mean, he plays hurt a lot with like little, not big stuff, but like,
right.
He always has these little things. I mean, he broke his wrist. He's playing through broken wrists last season. But yeah, hopefully he does. Hopefully everything goes well with that. Doesn't sound like anything major, but
yeah, nothing major. Just, you know, just wish him well.
For sure. Well, I think that's all we got, Doug. So thanks.
Beautiful.
Thanks everybody for listening. This has been the Believe in Timberwolves podcast presented by Bet Online. I'm your host, Brendan Hedke. He's Doug West, and we will be back soon to keep breaking down these NBA playoffs.
Peace. Out.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.